Okay, I'm to qualify briefly in 1 to 2 minutes. My name is Eric and I am an alcoholic. It's an honor to be of service to you. My sobriety date is March 21st, 2003. I'm sober only by the grace of God and you people in these rooms. I've been to a group conscious meeting, oddly enough. Right, so I'm going to introduce the speaker. Now, I don't know, for anybody who's new, and even if you've been around here a while, and you haven't seen the magic, the catalyst, that the one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, and the lights coming on, and somebody, it's really interesting and cool and amazing, and a lot of other things as well. And you stick around, and you get to see people come in and grow, and it's neat. I never thought I'd be around long enough to see anybody grow. It's odd. Anyway, I met this girl a few years ago, and I remember she used to come over to the house, and I could tell how she was feeling by how far down over her face her hat was pulled. She had this old Adidas trucker hat, and that brim was riding pretty low sometimes, but you know, I've seen her walk through a lot of stuff. I've seen demons cast out and dragons slayed, and I'm really proud to call this person a friend, and she could probably tell you a lot better about it than I could. So please help me in welcoming Allie.
Hi, everybody. Okay. Can everyone hear me?
Yes. Okay.
I'm Allie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
All right. Very grateful to be sober tonight. Feel very humbled right now, and very nervous. So I know everybody says that, but anyways, all right. I'm just gonna get right into it. I guess I'll start out with what it was like, and a little bit about my background and childhood, where I came from, and what happened, and what it's like now. So, I was born in Zephyr Hills, Florida, and my mom was an attorney, and my dad was a teacher. And Zephyr Hills, if you don't know about Zephyr Hills, you probably don't, but it's a very small town. I lived behind a dairy farm. There was very few people there, and I'm like seventh generation Pasco County, Florida, so from the south, it's my heritage. I'm German, Scotch, Irish, and have a Catholic background from my grandparents. But I guess my dad and my mom liked to party. My mom was a functional addict. My dad was a not so functional addict and alcoholic, and when I was, I also had a sister at the time, an older sister. She was 3 years older than me. She is 3 years older than me. When I was three, my parents got in a fight, and my mom went out to the, the family bar or whatever to, cool down or whatever. And on the way home, late that night, she hit a tree, and was killed in the car accident. I grew up without a mom. And then there's, my dad, whatever alcoholism he had at the time, whatever level it was, it got pretty bad pretty quick. And, he dealt with my mom's death and having two little babies to raise, the way I probably would if I was an alcoholic, which was, drink and not function so well. So he wanted a geographical change, and he moved us up to Boone, North Carolina, and that is where I lived for pretty much my whole childhood, from about 3 to 11. My dad was very, very sick, he was physically abusive. That's how he disciplined my sister and I, and, I know today that was really the best that he could do at the time. He was ill-equipped to take care of two girls and also suffer from alcoholism without a solution. So when I was about seven, I remember some people came and picked me up, my sister and I, up from school. I think I was in third grade. And up until that point, you know, I was a pretty relatively happy child. You know, I was too young to really know what was going on, and I just played outside most of the time and, you know, whatever, minded my own business, kind of unaware. But these people came and picked me up and said, you know, you're not going to be staying with your dad for a little while. And what had happened was my dad got into a little altercation with the police on a drunken stupor, and you know, had locked himself up in our apartment, and there were weapons involved. So anyways, long story short, he ended up getting on the news, and we lived in a very small town, so he was on the front page of the newspaper. And I remember going back to school before we were separated from my father for a couple months. We went back to school for a couple days, and this little kid that I had a really big crush on in third grade, I remember, on the basketball court, he just came up to me, and he'd always ignored me, but this day he comes up to me and says, you know, I saw your daddy on the front page of the newspaper, and he's a drunk. And you know, as a 6 or 7 year old kid, you know, that's extremely damaging, to say the least. I think that the level of shame that I felt at that point stuck with me throughout my whole entire life, because I didn't have a mom, and I was ashamed of my dad, and it was just you know, it wasn't a very secure childhood, to say the least. But anyways, long story short, you know, my dad ended up getting sober. We were separated from him for a few months. He got locked away and found God, and he's been sober ever since, so that's good. But he's got about 15 years. You know, I guess when we moved back down to Florida after he got sober, and we moved to Chula Oda, another small town, he started dating a lot of women, and most of them were half his age. And I remember being extremely jealous, because my dad was my only source of attention and love, and I was very confused, and, you know, it was kind of like a rotating door with, you know, with these girlfriends. And I started feeling neglected and ignored, and I started feeling really starved for attention. And you know, I don't know at what point I learned that bad attention equaled attention, but I definitely learned that really early on. And I realized that when I misbehaved, my dad gave me attention, even if it was yelling at me or hitting me or grounding me or whatever the case may be. So, you know, I started rebelling a little bit, because to me that was the only way he paid any attention to me. So, I was gifted as a kid. I loved school. I really did. I loved academics. I excelled pretty well in them. I loved sports. I loved to be outside. And around 11 or 12, I tried out for the cheerleading squad. And anyways, long story short, I ended up becoming a cheerleader, and I went from, you know, invisible bookworm to popular cheerleader overnight. And it felt great, because there was all this attention, and I'm this attention, you know, starved child. So, but what comes with popularity sometimes is, unfortunately, partying at a very young age. And one of my friends had introduced me to alcohol and some other substances, and I you know, I immediately did love the way it felt. You know, some people say that they didn't know, you know, they didn't get that feeling the first time. I definitely felt a feeling of escape, euphoria, extreme joy, you know, and happiness, and the freedom, you know, is really the key. So, you know, I remember that feeling, and I quickly, you know, my school career quickly went downhill, and I got kicked off the cheerleading team. I mean, in a matter of months, I was in seventh grade, and all I really could think about was drinking, and on the weekends, or from somebody's big sister or brother, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty much was my main focus. Everything else that I loved to do, you know, went down. So, you know, I started getting in trouble at home a lot. I started sneaking out with older boys, and being places where, you know, 12 and 13 year old girls should definitely never be. you know, and what I realized too is in my teenage years, I continually put myself in situations to be harmed. And so anything that really happened to me, for the most part, was because my alcoholism and addiction took me to those places. That was my driving force. I went into dangerous situations because I knew there was going to be alcohol there. And you know, unfortunate things happen when you're hanging around the wrong crowd sometimes, you know. So, you know, I around 13 too, I started you know, getting attention from older men. My sister was 3 years older, so her friends were over, and what I realized was if I couldn't get the attention that I really wanted from my dad, then I could get it from these older guys. Well, and they also had alcohol, so I started hanging around with them. And I started feeling really good, you know. I started feeling really good about myself. And I had arrived, right? And my boyfriend in school, you know, had found out about one of my other boyfriends. And he broke up with me. Well, unfortunately, at my house, my dad had gotten one of his girlfriends pregnant. And I was really, really pissed off about it. I was very upset, and I felt, you know, just once again neglected. You know, my dad doesn't love me. He loves all these people more, his girlfriends. So, long story short, I ended up trying to kill myself, and I took about 60 Tylenol, and my dad came to wake me up for school the next morning, and I was thrown up everywhere. So he rushed me to the hospital, you know, whatever, liver damage, all that, you know, good stuff that comes along with that. But the bottom line was I was a pretty sick kid, you know, from the get-go. I was depressed, like I said, attention-starved, and alcohol and drugs were like the perfect combination with that. You know, they made me feel good as long as I was on them. And as long as I knew I was going to get it, you know, as long as I knew I could drink on the weekend or do whatever, like, I could get through the week and not be absolutely out of my mind. Anyways, I guess moving on through high school, I didn't go much, but, when I did go, I was usually in trouble. I usually showed up, you know, on certain substances, drunk, hungover, rolling in from a party the night before. You know, my teachers, I wasn't the teacher's pet, I wouldn't say, but, you know, I was continually getting written up, and I really was just a rebellious kid from the get-go, man. I was, if you told me right, I'd go left just to go left, you know, that's just how I was. And, you know, I was also a pathological liar, and I lied for absolutely no reason. My dad, when I was 13, took me to a psychiatrist and said, here, please help her. She's a pathological liar. I don't know why she's lying about these, you know, ridiculous things. But, you know, it was attention. You know, I just didn't feel good enough. The shame of, you know, of whatever, you know, doesn't matter, but I felt ashamed all the time. I felt not good enough, not smart enough, not pretty enough, not anything enough. I was always less than. And, you know, some people say that they felt better than, and I really always felt less than. And my sponsor told me, I came up to her when I was about 6 months sober. I was absolutely out of my mind. And she said, I said, you know, I think I've figured out some of my problem. I think I have really low self-esteem. And she said, she looked at me and goes, Allie, you don't have low self-esteem. You have a negative self-esteem. Like, you absolutely hate yourself into the negative. And for some reason, that really just hit me. You know, it really did. And I was like, wow, yeah, you know, I have some serious self-image problems here, you know. But anyways, back shifting there. You know, I guess in high school, you know, I was the party girl. I was the girl that, you know, I'd go out on a bender on the weekend and come back with my head down because I didn't want everybody, you know, I didn't want to see everybody while I was walking down the halls laughing at me about what a drunk, you know, jackass I made of myself that weekend. And I was absolutely out of control. My dad tried to discipline me the best way he could. You know, he would ground me. I was probably grounded through 13 through 17, but I snuck out the window on several occasions. There was police, you know, all this kind of stuff. But I guess around 17, I was introduced to another substance besides just alcohol and some minor things there. And I took off with it, and I felt like that was what I had been looking for my entire life. Like, that feeling was it. And so I started getting into more and more dangerous situations. You know, I ended up dating, you know, the best of the best, you know, murderers, drug dealers, all those good things. And hanging out in the hood. And, you know, I thought that I was, I really thought I was invincible, too. You know, I mean, a little white girl showing up in my grandpa's Jaguar thinking that, you know, nobody's going to rob me or want to kill me or anything like that. I don't know what the hell I was thinking, but. So anyways, when I was 18, my dad kicked me out. I was in high school, and he said, you know, you're out of control. I can't deal with you anymore. Goodbye. And I said, that sounds like a great idea. I had Social Security coming in from my mom. So I was getting like $2,000 a month. I got an apartment. I was a senior in high school. And that soon turned into a, you know, party spot, to say the least. I stopped going to school as soon as I got that place, and I stayed in that hotel. I say hotel. I stayed in that room for 2 weeks. I didn't see the light of day. I had people come in and deliver me alcohol and substances and food if I was hungry at some point. And I stayed there. I had no furniture. I kept every day, I'm going to buy furniture. I'm going to buy furniture tomorrow. I left that place with no furniture. Yeah. But it was a really dark time. And, you know, as far as religion or spirituality, you know, my dad was, he might have been a spiritual guy, agnostic, but we never went to church. You know, my grandparents were the only strict Catholics in my family, you know, that I was exposed to. So I really didn't know too much about God, and I didn't know too much about morals either. I was just kind of, you know, floundering as a kid, like doing my own thing and trying to figure things out, you know. So when I was in this house, I got into a really depressed state, and I got down on my knees, and for some reason I had never prayed to God, I couldn't recall, but I got down on my hands and knees and I asked God to help me. And I ended up calling my grandmother, 7-year-old Catholic German lady, and told her that I had a bad alcohol and drug problem, and that, you know, I was wondering if she could come pick me up and help me out. And she did. And she came and moved my stuff, and I went and lived with her for the remainder of my senior year. Oh, yeah, I got arrested in there, too. But that was a traffic violation. So I moved in with my grandparents. I thought geographical cure. Like, I'm not around the bad guys anymore. I'm not around the party girls anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I was a fresh new start here with my grandparents. So I moved in with them, and, you know, my grandparents are wealthy, and I had everything I wanted materially, and I thought that if I just could, you know, if everything looked good on the outside, and this was a belief of mine for a long time, if everything looked good on the outside and I had, you know, a nice car and I had money in my pocket and, you know, I looked put together, then I was okay. And it took a really long time for that to sink in, that I was not okay, you know, with or without any of that stuff. So I felt like I was living life at my grandparents. Like I said, I was driving my grandpa's Jaguar. They gave me money every day to support my, you know, my habits, which was nice. They were enabling. I very soon found the same people, you know, over there. And it didn't take long. I was actually amazed. I ended up wrecking my car. Got really, really wasted one night. And got into a car accident. And it was a brand new car my grandparents had bought me. And I woke up because I was so scared of my family, because I disappointed them over and over again, and I just said, I want to go to treatment, just because it was like a defense, you know what I mean? It was like, they won't kill me if I say I want to go to treatment. So, I don't even know where that came from. So anyways, they put me in treatment. I wonder why. And, so I went to treatment for the first time when I was 18, 3 days after I graduated high school. Somehow miraculously I managed to graduate high school. I really don't know how, still to this day. But I ended up going into Turning Point in Tampa, stayed there for 45 days. It was nice. They had ping pong tables and nice little beds, and it was, you know, a nice little place to relax, get away. I'm sorry. I'm not saying that all treatment centers are like that, sincerely. But for me, I didn't need the frillies anymore. You know what I mean? I had too much of that. I had too much. You know, it introduced me to AA, and for that I'm seriously eternally grateful. It was a very expensive introduction. It was like $20,000, but you know, I did learn something. And originally I was going to NA only, and I was very anti-AA because all I heard about AA was that there was like some older men in the back that would like point their finger and yell at anybody who was a drug addict, and I didn't want to go there. So, you know, on the druggy buggies, we would get on there, and, you know, I would only go on the NA bus. I would never go on the A bus, and very adamant. I did every single thing you're not supposed to. I rebelled in treatment. I got the boyfriend, blah, 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 all this stuff. And I said no to everything. I took no suggestions. I also had an eating disorder. I was bulimic and anorexic, so they put me in the eating disorder / addiction / alcohol unit. And yes, I know. So, I was pissed. I was very pissed. And they took away sugar, all this stuff. They took away alcohol, drugs, sugar, caffeine. I was losing my mind. So, you know, so I picked up the boyfriend. So anyways, long story short, after treatment, I was in love with this guy, and I convinced my grandparents to buy me a little apartment in Sarasota on the beach so I could live with them, and somehow they bought it. So I moved down there. I lasted 9 days out of treatment. I thought I would never drink or use again, and I lasted 9 days, and I went on a really bad bender, and in my apartment, I locked myself up in Sarasota, and I ended up cheating on my boyfriend and feeling really bad and doing a lot of alcohol and drugs, and coming down wasn't so good, and I tried to kill myself again, and I took another couple handfuls of Lexapro, antidepressant, go figure, and I called my boyfriend at the time and asked him to take me to the hospital, because what I realized was I don't think I ever really wanted to die, because I got really freaked out when I thought I was really going to die once I put the pills in my system. But I just didn't want to feel the way I was feeling anymore, you know? I hated myself. I just absolutely despised myself. I treated myself worse than my worst enemy, you know, on a daily basis. And I continued to do behaviors that reinforced that, right? So anyways, long story short, you know, went to the hospital again. I think this was the third suicide attempt. And I moved. My aunt comes and saves me, my wealthy aunt. So she comes and saves me, and she says, "We're gonna go. You're gonna come live with me, and I'm gonna take care of you." Well, that didn't work out either. So long story short, you know, she was paying for all my stuff. I said, "This is great, another enabler." And I, you know, just kept doing what I was doing. And that was in Tampa, and she kicked me out finally when I disappeared for a few days. And I decided it would be a good idea to go support myself in the only occupation that I could. At the time, without any sort of work experience or anything. So, you know, I did what I did for a little while. And when I felt like I would really rather be dead than feeling how I was feeling and doing what I was doing, I showed up at my dad's house back in Oviedo and at the time, and I said, "Can I come live with you?" He said, "Yeah." So I came there. I started going to meetings, met guys, met drug dealers, met guys who went to bars and could buy me alcohol, because by this time I'm only 19. So, I did that dance for a long time, and I got 30 days for 2 years. I had 30 days, and I felt like I was really incapable of being sober and getting sober, and it gets kind of blurry right there, but, anyways, meanwhile, I was absolutely, you know, just absolutely crazy, because I was trying to be off of alcohol and drugs, and I didn't have a solution. And an alcoholic of my type, like, I need something in there, because I left to my own devices, and without alcohol, I am absolutely insane. And so, you know, I continue to do sick things. I'm not one of those people who gets sober and, like, doesn't act out, you know, in sick ways. I've gotten arrested sober. I've, you know, been, you know, deceitful, dishonest. I've done pretty much everything you can do wrong, sober and drunk. But that's what, you know, no solution looks like. And no God. I didn't have a God, men were my God, whatever else was. And so anyways, I kind of got sick and tired of doing the whole little, you know, in and out kind of thing, and I asked them to be my sponsor, and I was half-ass serious. I didn't really want a solution. I hated women when I came here. I hated women. They were a threat. You know, I didn't have any women in my life growing up. Boys were nicer. They told me what I wanted to hear. And you know, it's all going to be okay. So I went with that. But, you know, eventually that stopped working, and I couldn't stay sober. So I finally started talking to some women, and you know, I met this one girl eventually, who really changed my life, and I am eternally grateful for her. And you know, she got to me when nobody else could, no man, no woman, no anything. And she had been where I was at. She had felt the same way I felt, and I felt like finally I could be honest with somebody. Finally, I could tell somebody all the crazy thoughts that were going on in my head that I felt like somebody would lock me up, you know, if I told. And she loved me anyways. No matter what I said, no matter what I did, she loved me, and she showed me unconditional love, and she told me the truth, and it pissed me off a lot. And she took me through the steps, and she taught me about myself, and she brought me to a relationship with, you know, a higher power eventually. And, you know, for me, I guess the fifth step, you know, it took like 8 hours. Like, it was really thorough. And it was very, you know, it was very clarifying, I guess is the word, I don't know. But what I realized was, like I said, I was not a victim. I was a victim my whole life. You know, if your mom died, you'd drink too. If your dad was a, you know, abusive drunk, you'd drink too. And if this happened to you, you'd drink too. And what I realized at that point was I had no more excuses. I could always have an excuse. I could think of an excuse tomorrow. But the bottom line is I don't want to drink today, no matter what, no matter what happens. And anyways, you know, I feel like, not just with women, but with men too, but, you know, the self-esteem and the seeking outside sources for your contentment inside, I still struggle with that, but it's a lot better than it used to be. And, you know, I can look at myself in the mirror today and think, you're all right. You know, I don't say I fucking hate you and I want you to die, you know. Sorry for the F-bomb. But anyways, but, you know, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about other people. You know, I also wasn't a functioning person, like, sober. For the first 6 months, all I did was cry and lay in bed and say, you know, God, this is horrible. I hate my life. I hate myself, blah, blah, blah. And at some point, you know, I snapped out of it and realized that I probably needed to get a job. I started needing to do esteemable acts. My sponsor told me to do esteemable acts. Start doing something that makes you feel good about yourself instead of something that makes you feel worse about yourself. And so I went to school, I went back to school, and I, you know, I started functioning a little bit. I had a crazy boyfriend in the middle of all this that I met when I was 30 days sober, and he was my higher power for a few years. You know, I learned a lot through that relationship. God, it was painful. It was the most painful thing I've ever been through in my life. But what I realized was that I have placed far too much dependence on humans my entire life, to the point of just really, it's really runs deep. But, you know, this year has taught me a lot. I didn't have to set my sobriety date. My sobriety date is April 30th, 2008. And I was trying to get sober for about 3 years before that, and I couldn't make it longer than a couple months. How I stayed sober was I worked the steps, and I got a sponsor, and I got honest. And that's one of the biggest things for me, too, is that I realized that my lies were eating away at me. And if I wanted to stay sober, if I wanted a chance of staying sober, I at least, above all else, had to be honest with myself to the best of my ability. And that rule is no other principles or practice. I try to stick to that to the best of my ability because I was such a liar, and it really killed me. It killed me. But, so, where was I? But yes, okay, so my first year was just, I was just batshit crazy and out of my mind, and I just sat in these chairs. You know, I lived at the Winter Park group. I slept on the couch. I went to 5 meetings a day. I talked to the old-timers who were hanging around drinking coffee. I was just, I probably didn't make a lot of sense, but I stayed around. And I just kept coming. I didn't really have anywhere else to go. You know, I was tired of the old life. I didn't have any friends because all my friends were, you know, alcoholics and drug addicts. And so I think I was lonely, you know. And so I kept coming and there to the Learn Park group. And, you know, I don't know. I remember my last drunk, and it wasn't over the top. You know, I've been arrested several times. I've been to mental institutions. I've been into some really bad places. But my last drunk was just the fact that I thought it was pretty sad that I had to go down to 7-Eleven and buy, you know, a 40-ounce to pass out because I couldn't fall asleep. And it's funny how that was, you know, I said, I'm sick of this. You know, it's kind of humorous to me. But yeah, that was my last drunk, and I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I didn't want that life back. But anyways, fast forward. So, you know, this year, you know, quite a few things have happened. My, you know, boyfriend and I had broken up. My boyfriend is 4 years, so, you know, I did love very much. My sponsor of 12, she had 12 years sober, and she decided to relapse. And she was my best friend, and she was my confidant. She was my sponsor. She was everything to me. And once again, placing too much dependence on humans. But you know, she relapsed, and I grieved it like a relationship. You know, I was, to me, you know, I had her up on a pedestal, whether I wanted to admit it or not. And she came crashing down, and I wasn't prepared for that, and I got really angry, and I shut myself off from the people in these rooms, which is where my life was saved. You know, it's kind of ironic, but, you know, I didn't want to talk to any women. Everybody's going to relapse anyways. I sponsored a girl. She went back out. You know, it was just, that was my mentality. But that was killing me. You know, I can't stay alone for very long before I start getting really crazy ideas, and they sound like really sane ones. So, you know, I've learned to do the uncomfortable. Sometimes, you know, I make very bad mistakes still to this day. Very stupid mistakes. And they're very painful, but what I have realized, what I have been able to learn how to do from you people in an AA program, is make amends when I'm wrong. Try to clean up the mess to the best of my ability, not beat myself up with a club like I used to, and just keep trudging, you know? And, you know, also, you know, this year's been hard, and it might sound a little depressing, but I do want to say that being sober is absolutely the best thing that's happened in my entire life. I feel incredibly, incredibly grateful to be an alcoholic, and this relationship with God, you know, has its ups and downs, but he's pretty much always there. You know, I talk to him throughout the day, and he's given me unspeakable gifts. Like, I can't even describe what God has done in my life, I believe that my higher power wants the best for me and wants me to be truly happy and joyous and free, and I've been able to experience a lot of that in just a short time. I mean, I'm only 2.5 years sober, but my life has completely changed, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. I think I'm about done, right? All right, well, closing statements. I guess what I really want to say, too, is if there are newcomers in here, you know, if you've relapsed, you know, and you're coming back, you can get sober and stay sober. I am proof of that. I probably have about 80 white chips, and I'm not proud of that, but the reason why I say that is because I thought I was incapable of staying sober, and here I stand with a little bit of time together, you know, and through the grace of God. But I still don't understand. You know, I ask myself pretty much on a daily basis, why am I still sober? All these people are relapsing around me. And the only thing I can really attribute it to is that God sees it fit for me to be here to serve some purpose that I haven't served yet. And he doesn't love anybody else any more or any less. And I keep coming back here. Even when I'm angry, if I'm really happy, if I'm broke, if I'm rich, if I have a boyfriend or not, I'm usually sitting in one of these chairs. And I try to listen to what, you know, the solution is through you guys. And AA and every single one of you has seriously saved my life. And I'm done. Thank you very much for listening.